Podmates, this is Ori. Welcome to episode 10 of OrcaPod, a deep dive into DeFi from the builder's perspective. Today, I'm excited to welcome back my co-founder, Yutaro, to commemorate an exciting moment for Orca. We've just open sourced the smart contract for Whirlpools, our concentrated liquidity smart contract, and I know there's a ton of builders in our community who are excited to start developing on top of it. So today's episode will be for the devs in our community. It'll be all about Whirlpools, what makes our smart contract special, and the cool things you can build on top of it. Welcome, Yutaro.
Hey, glad to be here again. Excited to talk about Whirlpools.
Let's do it. And so maybe we start really just at the very beginning. Do you want to give, just for first-time listeners, a very brief introduction of who you are and why we're working on Whirlpools?
Sure. So I am Yutaro, the other co-founder of Orca. And you know, I spend a lot of time on the technical side, leading the engineering team and setting the direction kind of in terms of, you know, technically, what is the product? How are you going to build it? What are you going to build? And yeah, I can definitely talk about Whirlpools. Really, the motivation here is we are confident that the basic structure of Whirlpools is going to be the main way that liquidity is created in the Solana ecosystem. It's going to be the dominant DEX in the Solana ecosystem. And so it's something that we've been building for the last 6 months. And we launched it around, I think, a month ago in the beta.
March 25th, we rolled out the beta, which it's hard to believe it's been 6 weeks already.
Yeah. We ended our beta period and it's been live for around 2 weeks now. And so it's been exciting to see the adoption there.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, what kind of adoption have we seen?
At a high level, you know, the way I like to describe Whirlpools is, first of all, it's an AMM. And so I'm going to talk with the assumption that the audience has a vague idea of what an AMM is. I'll start there and say that Whirlpools, one way of describing it is it creates a single AMM for kind of a specific price range. And it lines up adjacent AMMs next to each other to cover the entire possible price range.
I think what we could do is really just start with like why Whirlpools is useful in the first place. So for example, as someone who just comes and swaps on Orca, why does Whirlpools matter to me?
In a nutshell, Whirlpools, it will give users a better swap experience, both for the blue chip tokens where there's a ton of liquidity to be expected, kind of like Sol and USDC, but also the long tail of tokens. The reason why it will give users a better experience when swapping blue chip tokens like Sol USDC is because liquidity providers have a lot more control over how much liquidity they provide and what kind of slippage they want to provide when traders want to trade against the pair. And I think the key point is that it's more efficient for liquidity providers. And so overall, they have to allocate less capital to provide users a better experience.
So basically, more efficient for market makers and as a result, better prices for the swaps, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot of nuance. You know, what makes Whirlpools kind of a great building block for the Solana ecosystem is how robust it is, in the sense that there's no single point of failure. And there's actually pretty much no maintenance that's required from let's say, the Orca team in order to ensure that, you know, it continues to function. More specifically, you know, it doesn't require admin keys to make sure that parameters need to be adjusted in the event of some kind of extreme liquidity event. Kind of similar to what's going on right now, actually, in the crypto ecosystem. You know, we're recording this on May 12th. I'm sure that'll be like a fairly infamous day, but you know, overall, there's just like a ton of liquidity problems, not just on Solana DEXs, but centralized exchanges everywhere. We as a team, we actually don't have to do anything in response to this. And it's really up to the liquidity provider. The liquidity providers are automatically incentivized to kind of adjust their positions and make decisions in terms of, you know, where they want to provide their liquidity, how much liquidity they want to provide. It's essentially something that can just continue functioning without us intervening at any point in time. I think that's something that will prove to be incredibly valuable long-term.
Yeah, that's something that we've been really gratified to observe, actually, right? With the various network disruptions and congestion that we've observed over the last couple of months, it's been pretty cool to see that even when things essentially grind to a halt, as soon as things start moving again, our DEX just kind of automatically starts moving as well. And so I think that's something that should provide a lot of reassurance, actually, to folks who are looking to build on top of a DEX in these kind of torrential waters, you might say. Because what we have to offer is like a very robust base for what you want to build on top.
Yeah, definitely.
But I want to get a little bit geeky in this one. Normally, our Orca pods stay pretty high level. But again, we are talking to our builders today. So let's actually talk about this Whirlpool smart contract. I'll come with a common question that we get is it a fork or a modification of an existing smart contract?
Everything is built from scratch, including even like the math library. Although, you know, the idea was inspired by kind of the ideas introduced by Uniswap V3. And so, you know, if you are familiar with Uniswap V3, it'll give you kind of a sense for how it works. Although there are a number of key differences based on our design philosophy and also based on the unique constraints of the Solana virtual machine.
Let's get into that. So what is your unique philosophy that differentiates this smart contract from, say, the Uni V3 or any other concentrated liquidity smart contract?
Sure. Maybe we can start with kind of Solana constraints, because I think that's pretty interesting and that'll...
One of your favorite topics.
Yeah. Hopefully be like kind of illuminating for any developers that want to get into things. I think the first one is... there's the concept of ticks. We'll call Whirlpools and Uniswap V3 concentrated liquidity AMMs part of the same family. And, you know, both share the concept of ticks. And ticks are basically kind of discrete markers across the price range. And between ticks are where, you know, these miniature AMMs are. And the way that concentrated liquidity AMMs work in general is that for each tick, you need to store data that does some accounting in terms of, you know, how much liquidity is in each tick or within two ticks or between two ticks, and also things like fee growth and, in our case, reward growth. For any given pool, there can be up to almost a million ticks. And each tick has around, I think, 90 bytes of data. And so if you think about like the maximum number of data or data that is required to be stored on Solana is quite large, much larger than something that you'd want to kind of allocate willy-nilly. And also, in the case of Whirlpools, because you only need to initialize ticks, or you only care about ticks for prices that are relevant to the given pair, you don't actually need to initialize all the ticks. What I mean by that concretely is, like, let's say, you know, we have the Sol USDC pair. In the past, even like 2 years, the prices range from, let's say, like $1 to $250. But with Whirlpools, it's actually possible to support like 10 to the negative 6 as a price, or 10 to the 6 as a price. So there's actually a much wider range of prices that could be supported. We only care about kind of, you know, a certain subset of those possible prices.
So it's actually up to the liquidity providers to allocate those tick ranges, essentially, if it hasn't been done before, right?
Exactly, exactly. The way that it needs to be solved in Solana is a little different from the way it needs to be solved in Ethereum because of the differences of virtual machines. So in Ethereum, you can basically, any given contract can dynamically allocate space on any given kind of transaction that's being executed. In Solana's case, it's much more constrained, and you can't just dynamically allocate more space on the blockchain. It essentially needs to be pre-allocated. The way we do it is we pack 88 of these ticks in a given account. And so we require this, what we call tick array, which has a length of 88, to be initialized anytime, you know, a liquidity provider wants to provide liquidity within a tick in that tick array. What's kind of interesting about that is that it makes it a lot more efficient to access these various ticks in a swap, or even, you know, anytime that someone is interacting with the Whirlpool smart contract, it makes it a lot more efficient to, you know, access these ticks, because oftentimes you actually want to like access ticks that are adjacent to each other. And so instead of having to load, you know, the alternate design would be for each tick to be a single account. But then, you know, it's possible in certain cases that a user will, you know, need to access, say, like 10 ticks, and then they would have to pass in 10 accounts. In our case, it's a lot more efficient to pass in these tick arrays.
Got it. So it does essentially fall on these folks who are creating the pools for the first time, much of the time, to initiate or initialize these ticks, right? Because that's something that I remember users actually being a little surprised by during the betas, like the cost of initializing all these tick arrays for these very new pools.
Yeah. If I recall right now, it's around, it was kind of like low single digits in dollar terms. You know, the flip side actually is that, you know, the cost to initialize a pool is basically cents. And on top of that, you need to initialize at least one tick array, maybe two, and that's kind of low single digits. So it's still kind of incredibly reasonable when it comes to, you know, the cost of creating a new pool.
Got it. Yeah, I think both the cost and the ease are things that are pretty exciting. We're really hoping that everyone will be able to use Whirlpools for whatever tokens they want liquidity for, right, in the ecosystem. So I think this is actually a smart trade-off as long as it's clearly communicated to the end user what the costs are of allocating ticks. But I know you also touched a little bit on the math library, and I know that's something our dev team is very proud of. So could you just tell us a little bit about this math library?
Sure. So in our contract, we need to do 256-bit math. So in Rust, the standard library only supports up to 128-bit math natively or in their standard library. And there's actually a 256-bit library that was written for a Ethereum client written in Rust called Parity. And, you know, given that Parity is in production, the library itself that they wrote is secure. It is used by a ton of other projects, but what we found when using it was that it was incredibly expensive. So, you know, doing long multiplication or long division, it oftentimes costs 10,000 CPU for a single multiplication or division. And just to get a sense of scale, you know, right now the maximum amount of compute units that is possible in Solana is 200,000 per instruction or transaction, depending on the Solana version. So basically, you can only do, you know, 10 until you run out, but you usually have to allocate some of that budget for other things as well. And so we couldn't really do a lot of the arithmetic that we wanted to do. We looked into it. It turned out that, you know, a lot of the multiplication division wasn't really optimized. It probably didn't matter for Parity because they run their, it's compiled essentially into something that can be run directly on a computer, whereas for us it needs to be run on the Solana virtual machine. And so yeah, we kind of like tested out re-implementing it ourselves, and we found that it was I think around like five times cheaper or five times more efficient when we re-implemented the library ourselves. And so that was kind of a fun detour for us. You know, the 256-bit library is actually used by a lot of folks, including the Solana program library that the Solana Labs folks have written. So it's something that we'll definitely open source so that anyone can use.
Awesome. So I'm glad that people will be able to take advantage of the work that our team has put into this. Do we have a cool name for our math library?
Yeah, I'm not the one that's been naming things at Orca. but you know, if you have any good suggestions.
I think we should definitely have a catchy name for this. You know, something along the marine theme. Seafaring compass. We'll think about it. We'll come back to this. But
yeah, we'll come back.
For the builders listening, keep an eye out for a jaunty, nautically themed math library. But I know you wanted to talk a little bit about PDAs, everyone's favorite topic.
Yeah.
First of all, for those who may not be familiar with a PDA, do you want to just say one or two words about what that is and then how we've incorporated a PDA-centric design into Whirlpools?
Sure. So PDAs are, you know, program-derived addresses, kind of something unique in some sense to Solana. Although, you know, a lot of other things have similar ideas. It's actually multiple things, but the part I'll focus on is the fact that all data in Solana is stored as an account, and the account has an address associated with it, which is essentially kind of like a pointer to the location of the account. One way to generate this address for an account is to just randomly generate a private key, derive the public key associated with it, and then use that as the address. But the other way is essentially using PDAs. And what that does is that it allows the address to be derived from the address of the program that creates the account, and then some kind of like seed, essentially like seed values, which are usually defined in the program itself. So the key point here is that it allows like accounts, which are kind of like, you know, the data that's stored in Solana, to be derived from values that are contained in the program itself or defined by the program itself. What we can do from here is that we can have these like really kind of nice and clean properties for the structure of the smart contract, where, you know, normally, let's say, you know, we have a Sol USDC pool. In the Sol USDC pool, we'll have a specific account. The kind of like simple way to do it is for the account to just be generated from some random private key, and then we discard the private key, and then you get this, you know, random account. But instead, what we can do is it can be derived from the program in a way that is like deterministic. And so we can say, you know, the Sol USDC pool address will be derived from, you know, the Whirlpool program, and the mint address of Sol and the mint address of USDC. You know, that allows someone to kind of determine the address of, you know, any arbitrary pair in Whirlpools without knowing anything other than the Whirlpool program address and the mint address of the pair. And so, you know, where this gets particularly useful is for essentially permissionless pools, right? Because it means it enforces this invariant that for any given key pair, there can only be one pool. You don't really need this like centralized repository of every single pool that's been created, or you don't really need to like scan, you know, accounts created by a program. All you really need is the mint address of, you know, the tokens that you want to trade, and then you get like the pool address, and yeah, you can kind of just swap there.
Yeah. What I love about that is that it is very scalable, right? I feel like it's a very blockchain native solution because you don't need these like outside processes getting involved, right? To ensure a basic property that you want to be true, which is essentially this no duplicate pools property, right? So I can see how this is one of those things where a little bit of extra love put into the smart contract design can have very, very long lasting impact later on. So thanks for sharing a little insight there. But I do want to move on to another topic, which is really just why open source? You know, we haven't been able to open source everything we've built until now. So why the open source with Whirlpools?
You know, the most basic reason is that open sourcing it allows developers, community members, everyone else to first like vet the program themselves and then also understand it so that they can build on top of it. You know, we see Whirlpools as this like very basic building block, and there's a lot of things that can be built on top of it. And open sourcing is really just like a necessary first step for that to happen. It's fairly hard to find on Ethereum, but you know, it was also hard to get them on Solana too. But we've been fortunate enough to get Kudelski and Neodyme to audit our smart contract. And so we're fortunately in a position where we feel pretty good about open sourcing the contract.
Yeah, that's something that I do think is worth highlighting, because with all the discussion of open source, I think it's very easy for people to say, well, why don't you just throw all the code in a GitHub repo and then just publish it, right? Isn't it as easy as that? But not at all, right? There's auditing, but there's also thinking about like licensing. There's thinking about a bug bounty, which we've been lucky enough to be able to work together with our community on, and just, yeah, a lot of logistical stuff, even just making sure the code is like super clean, right? So that's something that our team's been investing quite a bit of time in, right?
And we've been fortunate to have some awesome engineers, but, you know, one of our earlier engineers, his like essentially first task was to build a TypeScript SDK for our original AMM. And he just like knocked it out of the park. And it's been like great to see consistent feedback on kind of, you know, how great it is, how easy to use it is. And so, you know, we've also seen in Solana, in the ecosystem and with us, kind of the value that can bring to us, you know, in terms of like making it easier for people that are interested in using an AMM to use it. And so we've essentially doubled down on that. We're basically wrapping up refactor of the Whirlpool SDK, and that's something that we'll publish soon. And also on top of that, kind of plenty of documentation in terms of how it works, given that Whirlpools is like more complicated in terms of like internally how it works compared to our old pools.
That's something that I love to hear you highlight because, you know, something that we get as founders is just a lot of attention, right? People hear our voices, they see our faces, but so much of, I think, the beauty of Orca's products is really comes from the other engineers, designers, product, marketing, et cetera, that goes into it. And I think that really ties into this ethos that we have of user-friendliness and human-centered design that permeates throughout the entire protocol. So really not just that the UI UX that gets a lot of attention, but the developer experience as well. And then the community support that we provide both to users and to developers. So I think I'm really proud to see that we're able to share the smart contract now with folks so that they can actually learn from it. You know, there's only so many very complex public smart contracts out there in the Solana ecosystem, but also an SDK that really abstracts a lot of that complexity and makes it super easy to use. So in terms of the actual things that people can build on top of this, you know, we've hinted at the fact that it's a DeFi Lego and people will be able to build cool things on top of it. But like, what are the actual things that you, Yutaro, would love to see like just functioning on top of Whirlpools in a couple of months?
Okay, so I can't wait to talk about that, but I do want to like shill our SDK a little more while I'm here.
Okay.
Actually, another one of our engineers, he was kind of hacking around with the transaction confirmation logic because this is not unique to Orca, but we've seen these like network congestion issues. He kind of went off and dug into things, and he saw that basically there were these known issues with the way that the Solana SDK had been sending out transactions and confirming transactions. And he kind of went ahead and implemented a series of changes to do that. And it's actually like incredibly useful. And we've seen kind of huge changes in the responsiveness of our application just from using it. You know, he also added a few other things like making it a lot more efficient to sign and send multiple transactions at a single time. There are a lot of like inefficiencies in the network requests that are being made there. And so, you know, these are things that we've included in our SDK as well. So they're not just like specific to Orca. They're also just like, you know, general improvements that, you know, anyone in the Solana ecosystem can use. Yeah, and I'm excited to kind of share those as well.
Is that also something that's going to be broken out into a library that other folks can use for their own projects?
Yeah, we're going to have like a common SDK, or it's going to be called a common SDK. And that's going to be, yeah, things that are more for Solana in general.
Sweet. Well, you know, I'm hankering to give it a name, but we'll table that for now. And anything else you want to highlight?
Maybe I'll just start with like the most executable ideas, and then maybe we can like spend a little time riffing or something on more pie in the sky ideas. But you know, the most basic one is essentially like an automated strategy for the Sol MSOL pool and the Sol Stake SOL pool. So those are like the staked liquid tokens for Marinade and Lido. But essentially, you know, the way that it works is the value of MSOL should always increase relative to the value of SOL over time in a way that is like fairly predictable. And then because of that, you know, if you provide liquidity in Whirlpools over time, you'll get more and more SOL because that's the less valuable of the pair, and then less of the staked SOL or the kind of, yeah, the staked SOL. But essentially what you can do is it's possible to set up a process so that, you know, as you get more and more of just the pure SOL, you can just stake it on Marinade or Lido to get the liquid staked version back and then put that back into the pool. And you can just do it automatically in a way where you always are providing liquidity in like the tightest range to kind of like maximize the amount of fees that you're earning. You know, that seems like a relatively simple kind of ideas. And it would definitely be like something that would be kind of superior to the current approach, which is either to provide liquidity across a wider range or, you know, manually kind of doing that conversion.
Yeah, I love the idea of that also, because something that a lot of people want is really a way to participate in Whirlpools without having to be super active, right? I think not everybody is necessarily chasing like the most optimized yield and would be happy with like a somewhat more passive solution. So that kind of provides that, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of our ideas kind of revolve around, yeah, allowing folks that want to be more passive but still want to earn yield that's competitive with like the more sophisticated strategies. So yeah, another potential one that I think would be interesting is, you know, let's take like a lending protocol, say Solend. So when you provide USDC or USDT, you earn some amount of yield because you're lending out the token. But, you know, in exchange for providing USDC or USDT, you get this token in return that are called C tokens. And so it's basically just a tokenized version of the tokens that you provided as collateral, and you're going to continue to earn yield there. You know, one thing that's possible is you could just create, you know, instead of a USDC, USDT whirlpool, you can create a CUSDC, CUSDT whirlpool. And then what should be possible is that pool can be used for anyone that just wants to trade USDC and USDT, because you can basically atomically take whoever's trading their USDC, convert into CUSDC, put it in the pool, get USDT back, and unwrap that into regular USDT in a, let's say, a single transaction. And then for LPs, they will be earning yield on both lending out the token and then also the swap fees.
Another form of double dip. Yeah, I think this is the kind of more interesting composition that we're really kind of paving the way for right now. Like I think a basic Sol MSOL or Sol Stake Sol makes a ton of sense. But later on, I expect our community is going to come up with stuff that even we didn't think of. And it's going to look a little more like this, you know, the Chimera Legos that I remember making as a kid, where I would disconnect arms from like one Lego man and put it on another Lego man just for the fun of it. Except this time it's a little more practical, right?
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, speaking of that, you know, we've started to get a lot of inbound already about folks who are keen on building on top of whirlpools. So I think we could talk a little bit about our upcoming builders program. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we said before, we feel like whirlpools is going to be kind of the key DEX in the Solana ecosystem. It's also like a fairly kind of, it's a fairly flexible construction, and there's a lot of opportunity for others to kind of build their own ideas on top of it. And so we are going to have a builders program that will kind of encourage and support, you know, anyone that wants to build on top of whirlpools. And yeah, I mean, for that, you know, we plan on kind of having, you know, some percentage of the Orca supply to support it. And then of course, you know, us as founders and the entire team will help support anyone that wants to build. We can also provide feedback. We can also, I think I will definitely propose like more and more ideas in terms of what can be built. And yeah, I'm really excited to see kind of how that plays out.
Yeah. In some ways, this is a bit of an experiment for us, is like kind of launching a grant style program. We do believe that Whirlpools is the most compelling liquidity layer for this ecosystem, and that it's just so simple, so plug and play. And I think we'll definitely see some ideas that we'd never thought of, like I mentioned. And so if you're interested in that, and or even just like looking for an idea to hack around with on Solana, I would encourage you to check out our Twitter, where we'll be sharing the link to the Builders Program, all of the different resources available, and how to get in touch if you think that you might be interested in kind of dabbling around. And yeah, we really look forward to supporting these projects and hopefully doing some sweet co-marketing as well. I know we're getting to the end of our time today. I thought maybe we could just finish up by asking you, Yutaro, if you have any tips for builders who want to get started hacking on Solana, hacking on whirlpools, and you know, anything that they should keep in mind.
Yeah, I think first thing is like, please hang out at our Discord. We're around. We do take developer support seriously. And so like documentation and whatnot is something that we will lean into. But, you know, just like talking to us directly, that is kind of a nice way to get a feel for, you know, the product and, you know, any kind of question that you might have. I guess like maybe in terms of like product ideas, one way of thinking about it is like, okay, like, is there anything that can be built that, you know, enables kind of like sustainable yield to be generated more effectively? I guess that like might be kind of abstract in some ways, but
it's like the vault dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like pretty simple ideas that I proposed earlier. I think they do have some element of like making it easier to kind of generate yield that was already there, but, you know, essentially just automating it. And so, yeah, I think that like there's a ton that could be done there, especially on Solana, where the design space is kind of larger just because, you know, transactions are cheaper. And so I'm really excited to see what kind of ideas people can come up with.
For sure. Yeah, I kind of think of it as almost just like this giant waterfall, right? There's like so much power, so much potential efficiency, and so many ideas that can be driven by this one smart contract. But it's really not very optimized yet, right? The space has only begun to be explored. Maybe people have some like basic water wheels generating some energy, but there's a lot more that could be done to optimize this engine. So once again, really encourage any of y'all who are interested to check out the upcoming Whirlpools Builders program on the Orca Twitter, and also to join us in our Discord, where both our team, but also just a ton of like really helpful and excited developers from the community are often there helping each other answer questions. So something that's very heartwarming to see. Thank you again, Taro, for coming back onto OrcaPod to engage directly with our community of developer dolphins.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Alrighty. And to our podmates, thank you so much for tuning into OrcaPod. Stay tuned for the next episode. You can check us out again on Twitter at Orca_SO or join our Discord through the link in the show notes. Taro, it's been a splash.